Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to the show. And today is Thursday, October the 27th, 2022. And Dr. Tim had something going on today and tomorrow, so both of his hours today and his hour tomorrow will be pre-recorded. And then Michael and I will be on live in an hour. So today's is Way of Mastery, Lesson 3. Enjoy listening.
This is a recording of the book, The Way of Mastery. The book is available through the Shanti Christo Foundation at www.shantichristo.com. Please visit that website to purchase the book and read more about this information. Lesson 3. The Power of Forgiveness. If I search the languages of your world, I cannot find the words that can convey the love that I feel for you. I cannot find the words that can convey unto you the love that God has for all of us. I cannot find a concept, a word, an idea, a philosophy, or a dogma that can contain the mystery that is closer to you than your own breath and awaits your discovery. If I search throughout all of creation, if I search through the many mansions that exist within the domains of my Father's creation, and that creation is infinite, try as I might, I cannot discover anything that can truly describe you. I cannot find anything that is of greater value than you. In truth, I cannot discover anything that speaks more eloquently of the love that God is than your very existence. Therefore, in truth, I look upon you constantly and marvel at the radiance of my Father's love. It is through you that I come to discover all that God is. When I walked upon your earth as a man, I began to realize that the greatest gift that I could ever receive would only come to me as I chose to surrender every perception that I might conjure up about you, my brother or sister, that would veil the truth that is true about you always. When I was 9 years of age, I began to awaken to exactly what I am describing to you. As my father would take me to sit with the elders, and as he would read from the Torah to me, I began to be compelled by something within. Something began to speak to me that underneath all of the perceptions that I could create of another, there was something radiant and shimmering waiting to be discovered. I began to feel very different from my peers. I began to be preoccupied with inner things. When I listened to the elders speak, I would often feel as though I had drifted far away from where they were. Pictures would come to me, thoughts would come to me, and feelings would come to me that I did not understand, that I had not assimilated into my being. But something began to compel me. How might I discover how to see only that shimmering radiance. Would it be possible for me to see my brothers and sisters as my Father sees his children? I discovered that the way to see with the eyes of Christ begins with the acceptance that I, as a creator, created in the image of God, literally chose every experience and call it to me, that I create the veils through which I view creation. I began to shift my perspective slightly, and I began to be seen as someone who was rebelling against the teachings of my Essene elders, for I began to move away from striving for God, striving for perfection, and began to cultivate within myself the process of allowing. I discovered that if I looked upon my perceptions, my feelings, my behavior, exactly as they were without overshadowing them with my own interpretations, if I could teach myself to embrace things with innocence, veils began to be dissolved from my mind. For when I was 9 years old, I had already learned to be fearful of thinking, speaking, or acting in a way that was not in conformity to the prevailing wisdom of that time, even within the Essene community, which had become rather rigidified. There was already much dogma, and dogma always leads to bickering. I began to discover that if I looked with innocence upon all things, a light began to shine through the things I was looking at. And as I rested more and more in this innocence, more and more of the light would shine. As I grew in age, I discovered that the old teachers who spoke of the need to forgive 70 times 7 knew something quite profound that had even become lost within the Jewish and Essene traditions of my day. For to forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It is, therefore, an act of forgiving one's self of one's projections. As you begin to forgive, even 70 times, 7 times, each time you forgive, you take yourself deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. You begin to see how profoundly you have been coloring, and therefore affecting, all of your relationships through the simple act of not being aware of the power of projection. Therefore, I learned, and learned well, that forgiveness is an essential key to healing. The opposite of forgiveness is judgment, and judgment always creates separation and guilt. Judgment will evoke a sense of guilt in the one that has been judged, unless they are perfectly awake. But more than this, each time that you judge anything or anyone, you have literally elicited guilt within yourself. Because there is a place within you, yet still, that knows the perfect purity of your brother and sister, and sees quite clearly that all things within the human realm are either the extension of love or a cry for help and healing. When you judge, you have moved out of alignment with what is true. You have decreed that the innocent are not innocent. And if you would judge another as being without innocence, you have already declared that this is true about you. Therefore, to practice forgiveness actually cultivates the quality of consciousness in which you finally come to forgive yourself. And it is indeed the forgiven who remember their God. We wish to share with you the power of forgiveness, how to cultivate it, how to refine it, how to understand the depths of it that can be revealed to you as you forgive 70 times 7 times. And how to bring up within you that which has not yet been forgiven, but perhaps forgotten. In this lesson, we will also speak of what perception is and what projection is. Beloved friends, these things are of critical importance. For anyone who enters into a so-called spiritual path must eventually face and deal with their deep need for forgiveness, which is an expression of the soul's deep desire to be forgiven. For there is no one who walks this earth who has not been touched by the poison of judgment. As we speak of these things, let not seriousness enter the mind. For in truth, all we are really doing is describing what you need to do and can do to release the burden of illusion that seems to cause you to feel a heaviness upon your countenance and a sense of a lack of safety in the world. You could think of it as taking your rheostat and turning it up a bit by enlightening you, taking your burden of guilt and judgment from you. Therefore, in truth, understand well, forgiveness is essential. What has not been forgiven in others has not been forgiven in you. But not by a God who sits outside of you, for he never judges. What you have not forgiven in another, or in the world, is but a reflection of what you carry within as a burden that you cannot forgive of yourself. You have an interesting saying in your world, it takes one to know one. Do you think you would even be able to judge another if there was not something within you being elicited that triggers within you the belief that you know exactly what the other one is up to? That is why you judge them. Sometimes you judge harshly because you fear that energy in yourself. Or you remember how hurtful you have been when you acted from that energy. But when you have forgiven yourself, rest assured, you will know what it means to walk in this world yet not be of this world. You will be able to feel the energy or the activities that any other soul may freely choose. You will discern that energy. You will understand that energy, and you will see through it and still see the face of Christ before you. You will not react, which literally means to act again as you did in the past. Instead, even if you are being persecuted, or to speak from personal experience, to be nailed upon a cross, you will have cultivated the ability to love. And in all situations, no matter what another is doing, your first response will be to enter into the quiet stillness within and merely ask the Holy Spirit, "What would you have me say? What is the most appropriate for this other soul in this moment?" For when forgiveness has purified the mind and the heart and the emotional field of your own being, you will discover that you exist only to extend love. You are the savior of the world. In each situation, your role is to ask the Holy Spirit how you can serve the atonement, the correction, the healing that yet needs to be acquired within another soul. So even if one hates you, you will not respond with defensiveness, but with curiosity, with innocent witnessing. Even if your hands have nails going through them, I tell you truthfully, it is still possible to enter the quiet sanctuary of the heart and to ask of the Holy Spirit, "What would you have me say or do that can serve the healing of my brother or sister's heart?" All that I will be sharing with you, not just in this lesson, but in this course, has as its final goal your complete Christed consciousness and the fulfillment of what your own soul desires, forgiveness. Forgiveness, the bridge to the soul of your brother and sister. There is nothing you can be aware of in the energy of another that you have not known in yourself. There is nothing another can do or say, or even imagine themselves capable of saying or doing that you have not also known. Again, it takes one to know one. When you perceive another acting out of hostility or fear, the only way you can recognize it is because you have been there. The very fact that in your world one can murder another's body and you can react with knowledge that that is inappropriate behavior, is because as a soul, you know the energies involved in the attempt to murder another. If you are honest with yourself, you can probably come up with at least 50 times in the last year that murderous thoughts have entered your mind. You may not act on them. You may not even dwell on them for more than a split second, but the energy has come into the field of your awareness, and you have known it and recognized it. Who then is less than you? Who then is worthy of your judgment? No one. Who then is equal to you? Everyone. And who then is worthy of your love? Everyone. Forgiveness is the bridge that links you to the soul, the essence of your brother or sister. Forgiveness is that bridge that, when cultivated, will allow you to see clearly, not just the energies that another is expressing, but you will literally be able to see what events seemed to cultivate that soul's belief that they must act in a way to survive, and what perceptions have led them to feel justified in their inappropriate behaviors. You will see it as clearly as though someone had drawn a picture in front of you. Then you will see skillfully what to say and what to do to gently help another correct their misperceptions of themselves and learn the path of self-forgiveness. And when that hour comes, rest assured, you will walk in this world, yet you will not be in it. You will become as I became. You will be the savior of the world. The veil of projection. What is projection? Projection occurs when there has first been denial within yourself. Projection is an act in which you psychically try to throw out of your ownership everything that you have judged as being despicable or unworthy of you, something you do not want. So you will project it. You will throw it up and out and let it land on whomever happens to be nearby. Projection is the effect of denial of the first axiom that I have given you. It is the denial of the truth that nothing you experience has been caused by anything outside of you. Projection is the attempt to insist that reality is other than the way God made it, that you are not powerful, that you are a victim of circumstances, that you are in a world that can actually do things to you and cause you to make decisions that you would not have made otherwise. That is denial, and it is a lie. Again, projection is the denial of the first axiom of truth, and you have mastered it well. When you project onto another, you will then believe that your anger or your hatred is justified. In fact, the legal system means merely to take the act of projection and the need to judge and to make it okay socially, so that you need not be concerned with this other as your brother or as your sister who has been crying out for help. Rather, you become justified in punishment. Yet punishment is only the insane attempt to convince the punisher that the darkness, the evil, whatever you call it, is not in them. It is out there. Imagine then a society in which the prevalent legal view is simply that your brother or your sister is an aspect of yourself. And if you would help yourself, you must help them, meeting each cry for help and healing with forgiveness, love, and support. Can you imagine for a moment what it would be like to live in such a society? How would it be different than the world you see? You would have these things be different. It must begin with you. For the way to heal the world is not by seeking to change what is on the outside, but by first changing what is on the inside. When that change has occurred, you will become a conduit for an energy that knows how to use your gifts and how to place you in just the right situations. And a great power will work effectively through you, the power alone that knows how to heal your world. There are many that would love to march for peace by angrily attacking those who make war. But if you would create peace in the world, you must be at peace within yourself. Projection is an act of trying to get rid of what you do not want to own within. It is the effect of denial of truth. Projection colors your brother or sister with the very energies that you would judge within yourself. How can you begin to break the pattern of projection? How can you allow the bridge of forgiveness to be built? It is actually quite simple, but it will require your commitment. Awakening requires vigilance and discipline. I have said to you many times that the world you see is nothing more than the effect of the thoughts you have held within the mind. Therefore, awakening requires the act of vigilance and discipline. The discipline to cultivate a way of living in which you observe your own thoughts, in which you would listen to the words that are coming out of your own mouth, in which you observe the feelings that are evoked within your body, the reactivity that seems to own you, and to see these things as innocent and simply self-caused. When next something is reflected to you by the world that causes you to become angry or causes you to be in judgment, stop right where you are and look, not with judgment of your judgment, but with innocence and honesty. Oh, I see that I'm judging someone. That is an interesting cloud passing through the sky of my awareness. I wonder if I might be able to make another choice. Now the mind will tell you, but this person just broke into my house and stole my stereo. Of course I have a right to be in judgment. I have a right to feel angry. But I say unto you, anger is never justified. It does not mean you will not experience it, but stop fooling yourself into believing that there is some validity to it. When someone has just broken into your home and taken your stereo equipment, or some other idol that you love, what if you understood that you had the power in that moment to remember that all events are neutral? They merely provide you with a chance to choose love. What if you literally chose the insane way, according to the world, of looking upon that one who has just done that act as a brother or a sister who is crying out for help and healing? What if you chose to look upon them as one who does not know how to live in this world without being of the world, who does not know the way to self-forgiveness, who does not know the truth of the light that lives within them, and who does not recognize their great power to create whatever they want in a way that is not hurtful to anyone? What if you chose to look upon them with compassion rather than reactivity? It begins in simple ways. To set the stage, I want you to remember that time has been given to you that you might use it constructively. That means when you awaken in the morning, realize that you are in school. You do not have to drive anywhere. You're already there. The universe is literally helping to assist you in having experiences that will bring things up for you so that you can choose to look at them differently, thereby discovering the great power within you, the freedom within you to choose what you want to perceive and to elicit only what you want to feel. so that even if nails are being driven through the hands, you finally are liberated in the power to choose love, and therefore to overcome this world. Having said this, understand that each of your days is a blessing and a gift if you use it from the full commitment to awakening. Your day is chock full of a million opportunities to discover a deeper truth. Therefore, never feel the purpose of your life must be something other than what you are involved in. For remember what we spoke of earlier. You are literally creating everything you choose, and nothing is forced upon you. Now we are going to take that thought just a little deeper for a moment. It literally means that if you have decided you want to awaken, you have already called to yourself every experience that can truly best serve your awakening. The friends, family, and people you have relationships with are those who likewise can best gain from the experiences elicited through relationship with you. It means that right here and right now, you are already demonstrating the power that you are seeking, the power to truly choose to awaken and to command the whole of creation to serve you in that awakening. Therefore, when you awaken, in each of your mornings, look around. Who is that person sleeping next to you? They are your perfect companion. They are a messenger of God. For just behind your experiences, there is something deeper taking place. Because your mind is resting right next to the mind of God when you first said as a soul, "I want to awaken. I want to go home." The Father answered your prayer and began to send the thought through your spirit and through your soul to your conscious mind. I know how to direct you home. Give up this career and start that one. Move from this location to that location. You began to feel all manner of impulses. You began to read different books. You began to do different things. You met someone and fell in love. All by accident? Hardly. The very thought that you would claim as your own, from which you have created the world of your own personal experience, is also literally the result of your prayer to awaken. And the Father is creating, assisting you to create, just those experiences as stepping stones that carry you from where you are to where God is. The result is that your ordinary daily life is the most perfect ashram you could ever be within. It is the holy city to which it is wise to make pilgrimage every day, which means to bring awareness and commitment to exactly what you are experiencing, to be thankful for it, to bless it, to embrace it, to be vigilant, and to be mindful. What is this moment teaching me? Having given that as background and foundation, remember that you do not experience anything that is called an ordinary moment. In each and every moment, extraordinary things are occurring. Extraordinary things are occurring in which the whole of the universe is conspiring, which means to breathe together. The universe is conspiring with you to awaken you and to heal you. Trust it. Love it. That these things are true, and I assure you that they are, means that your life, the very life you are living, is equal in power and majesty and effectiveness to any life that has ever been lived. It means that your very life is equal to the one I lived, for it is bringing you home as my life was my pathway home to God. To build on what I shared earlier, the third axiom or principle could be encapsulated this way. I do not live any ordinary moments. With each breath, my experiences are the stepping stones laid before me of God to guide me home. I will bring awareness to each moment and allow it to teach me how to forgive, how to embrace, how to love, and therefore how to live fully. In your ordinary moments, 1,000 times each day, you will be confronted by opportunities to be disturbed. And in that very moment, you are being given the blessing of the opportunity to choose peace, to remember to cultivate a perception of your brother or sister that is a perception birthed out of the Christ mind, not the egoic mind. Forgiveness, then, can be practiced diligently, and you will not need to look too far. You will not need to make a pilgrimage to some far city. You will not need to go sit in a cave in the mountains somewhere to discover the way to God. It is all around you, because you can only be where you have decreed to be. You have decreed to be there because you, as a soul, truly want nothing more than to awaken. Your life, just as it is unfolding moment to moment, is meant for you. If this is true, and I assure you that it is, the way to God can only be found in your willingness to embrace and live fully the very life that is within you and that unfolds through you with each moment. To live without fear, to go forward, to indeed trust and embrace the very power and majesty that is the seed, the soil, and the ground from which your life's experience is unfolding. It is precious, it is extraordinary, it is blessed, and it is given to you of God. Would you not embrace the blessing of your life and sanctify it to keep it holy and recognize that your life is worth respect? It does not matter what anybody else thinks. It matters what you think. Beloved friends, your life is your way home. If you do not live it fully, how can you ever arrive home? Therefore, fear not your greatness. Fear not the power that comes from embracing your life and claiming its value. Live it full out with every bit of passion you can muster. Embrace every second of it. Every time you wash your dish and your cup after breakfast, look upon these things and say, "My God, this is my life. This is my pathway home, and I'm going to live it." Precious friends, in this way, you will come to forgive yourself of the judgments you have made. For who among you has not known the feeling of saying, "God, my life is just not worth very much. I will never be like so-and-so down the street. I'll never have enough money. Not enough people are going to know me. When will my work ever get out as big as that person's work?" And so on and so on. But I say unto you, every time you have judged yourself, you have weakened yourself. Every time you have judged yourself or another, you have slipped down the mountain another notch, when your desire is to be at the summit. How forgiveness heals. Understanding these things, let us look more closely at forgiveness. How does it work? What really occurs when you forgive? You are a conduit of energy. To the degree that the conduit is in perfect working order, the energy can flow so radiantly that the conduit actually becomes transparent. That is, it no longer blocks. There is no barrier or limit to the light. When you judge, it is as though you contracted and made the walls of the conduit smaller, just like building up rust in your pipes. and the flow becomes less and less. As you forgive judgments, it is as though the rust in the pipes is dissolving. It is as though the walls of the pipe that are carrying the liquid of God's love begin to expand and become thinner and thinner and more transparent. Judgment is contraction. Forgiveness is relaxation, peace, trust, and faith. Forgiveness allows the spaciousness within your consciousness to grow. For when you look upon the thief that has broken into your home and say, "I forgive you," you are decreeing the opposite of what you have learned. You are decreeing that nothing can be taken from you of any value. You are decreeing that judgment is the opposite of what you want. And it will cause you to feel the opposite of how you want to feel. You are decreeing your power to perceive differently. You are therefore healing yourself. If you ever want to come home, you are going to have to become very, very divinely selfish. You are going to have to become so selfish that you will not tolerate judgment in yourself of anyone or anything, because you will begin to recognize that every such act catapults you to the other side of the universe from where you want to be. Judgment causes the very cellular structure to break down. If you could see this, you would never judge again. When you judge, even the cells of your body go crazy. They vibrate in a completely dissonant way. There is contraction. The fluids do not move through the cells. The nutrients do not become transported or delivered to the cells. The waste matter is not properly disposed and processed. Everything gets clogged up, and there is dis-ease. Therefore, beloved friends, understand well that judgment is not something to take lightly. Should you then judge yourself if you have noticed that you have been in judgment? No, that is a judgment in itself. Only love can heal. Therefore, when you know you have judged, simply say, "Ah, yes, that is that energy. I recognize that cloud that has just passed through the field of my awareness, but I can choose again." So how does this work? If in your ordinary life, that we now know is not ordinary at all, you detect that you have been in judgment of someone or something, recognize that that judgment is still with you. It is a present thing, even though you may have enacted it 5 minutes ago, or 55 years ago, or 10 lifetimes ago. When you notice it, or bring awareness to it, you have made it a very present thing. So it is right there in front of you to be undone, and that is what you need to focus on. I am going to choose again. You know the experience of looking back in your life and suddenly seeing a scene in which now you know you have behaved selfishly from ego, and that you were manipulative or cunning or hurtful. Or you recognize, "My God, I was really in judgment of that person. Oh, if only I could go back and undo it." You know that feeling. I say unto you, you can. Because everything is present. There is no such thing as past and future. There is only now. So when you have that thought or that memory, it is coming to you for a very specific reason. As a soul, you are learning about forgiveness and how to undo the effects of your previous choices. And it is being presented to you yet again that you might make a new choice. When that old memory comes, stay with it. look at it. Recognize how judgment worked at that time. And then say to that person or that event, I judge you not. I extend forgiveness to myself for what I have created. I embrace you and I love you. I free you to be yourself. I bless you with the blessing of Christ. Then, see that image or that memory begin to gently dissolve into light until there is no trace of it left, and be done with it. Right away, the mind says, but when I kicked that little boy in the shins when I was 4 years old just to watch him scream, well, he is not here. Isn't he? The body is not here, but the body is not quite the soul. All minds are joined. It means that where you extend forgiveness within the consciousness, within your emotional field to another, whether they be physically present or not, you are extending to them exactly what you could extend to them if they were physically in front of you. Even if they were, they would still have to receive it, do they not? They still have their choice to make, whether to accept your forgiveness or to remain in judgment of you. And that is their issue, not yours. Understand, then, that you are dealing with consciousness. You are not a physical being. You are spirit. And you are intimately linked with all minds at all times. Therefore, forgiveness of another can occur any time you decide it can occur. Anyone you have ever believed has wronged you can be forgiven by you in this very moment. Any time you have judged another, and therefore been in judgment of yourself, you can undo that in the very present moment, simply by making a different choice. Reactivity indicates the need for self-forgiveness. Rest assured, you will continue to project upon others what remains unhealed and unforgiven within yourself. Each time you react to another, you are being given a sign that there is some kind of energy that has been presented to your awareness that you have not forgiven within yourself. If someone is critical and you react every time they are critical, rest assured you have not healed that part of your own being, that part of your own experience of being critical of others. Whether it is occurring now, or whether it seems to be a pattern that you have interrupted and no longer do, you have still not forgiven yourself for being identified with that energy. Use your ordinary experience in each day to observe what pushes your buttons. We will give you a very simple technique for doing so. If you stay with it, it will reveal to you the energies that are in need of your forgiveness. The technique is quite simple. As you go through your day, observe when you feel as though you are in contraction. Are the muscles of the body tight? Is the breath very shallow? Does your voice become faster or louder when you speak about some energy in someone else? That is a sign that you need to do healing within yourself. When you recognize that these kinds of signs are going on, in other words, life has presented you with an opportunity to be disturbed, that is a sign that there is something that requires healing. Therefore, count it a blessing if you feel disturbed. Healing exercise. Turn your awareness from what you think is causing the disturbance and remember the first axiom. I am the source of my experience. I am feeling disturbed. What is it in me that needs to be healed? Begin to breathe deeply and rhythmically. Let the body soften and relax. And ask, what is it within this person's energy that is really causing my reaction? You will see it right away.
Oh, they are so critical. Criticism pushes my buttons. And then ask yourself, when have I done that to another? Where have I been critical of others? And it might hit you right away. Well, I'm being critical because they're being critical. Or memories will come back. Distasteful memories, if you're judging them, let them come back. Continue to breathe and relax. Look upon that energy of being critical. Honor it, love it, for it is a creation. It is your creations coming back to you, that you might embrace them and transform them. Just stay with it. Look at it. Ah, being critical. Yes, I sure can be critical. I've been that way in the past. I know that energy very well. Look upon a scene in your memory in which you have been the one being critical. Look upon it with deep honesty and sincerity and say to yourself, I forgive me for being critical. I forgive my judgment of myself. I choose to teach only love. Watch that image dissolve and disappear from your mind. Bring your awareness back to the present moment and that person that just pushed your button. Again, you do not need to say anything to them at all, although you might. But within yourself, forgive them for allowing the energy of being critical to temporarily make a home in their mind, and merely ask the Holy Spirit to replace your perception with the truth. Ask to see the innocent light within them. As you cultivate this, you will become very, very good at it. You will be able to do it as fast as the time it takes to snap your fingers. And once you begin to see the light in them, you can ask the Holy Spirit, what is this critical energy in them masking? What are they really crying out for? Then you will feel compassion, for it will be revealed to you why they are hurting inside. And lo and behold, instead of being reactionary toward them, you just might be compassionate. Your choice of words and your own behavior might turn out to be different than you could ever have imagined. For through you will flow exactly what serves them. When I was being nailed to the cross, there was one who raised the mallet to strike the nail. And as he raised the mallet, his eyes met mine for just a moment. I did exactly what I have described to you. By this time I had mastered this, so it was done very quickly. I asked myself, how have I ever wanted to drive a nail through someone else? And I remembered my murderous thoughts. I forgave myself and brought my attention back to that one and asked only to see the light in him. And I asked, what is it that this action is mirroring to me? What is it masking within him? And I saw that one's soul, and I loved that one's soul, and I felt compassion for that one. In that moment, mark my words, in that moment of eye contact, that one got it. Because my energy was different, it created the space in which that soul could make a new choice. That soul suddenly saw the entirety of its experience and realized that if it allowed the mallet to fall upon the nail, it would be a decision to choose to continue being nothing more than a doormat for other people's perceptions. And in that very instant, that soul decided to follow a path that would lead to sovereign mastery and never again be a pawn of any government or any group or any faction or anyone. He dropped the mallet from his hand, This was a Roman soldier. He stood up, walked away, and disappeared. That one has gone on to become a master that is known by literally thousands of beings. He is not in physical form. This one visits many and teaches many. This one indeed incarnated perfect mastery and therefore transcended the world. And it all began as the result of my desire to teach only love. Now we have a very good friendship. So you see, you may not know how powerful your choice for healing is. You may not really see how deeply and profoundly it will affect you as you go on being a creator. And you go on forever. You could never possibly know what fruits will be born from that tree in the life of another. But because all minds are joined, when you choose healing through forgiveness, you literally create the space in which the other can also heal their life. Let no moment then be wasted. See nothing as ordinary. And see not the perceptions taught to you of the world being justified within yourself. Be wholly committed to rooting up and out of your being anything that is unlike the love of Christ. Think not that I am the only one that can live this way and love this way. It is not true. You are here to love as I learned to love. Why? Because you are that love. Everything else is just a smokescreen. Forgiveness is necessary. Forgiveness is a skill and an art that will pay you dividend upon dividend upon dividend upon dividend. It will never cease paying in you. Each moment in which you choose forgiveness, you have literally saved yourself 1,000 years of suffering. I mean that about as literally as one can mean it. In short, every act of forgiveness is a miracle that shortens the need for experience in this dimension. When you find yourself in a situation that you believe is too big, rest assured it is because something big has finally come to the surface to be healed within you so that more power can shine forth through you. Why? You have reached the place where you are ready for it. More of Christ can be lived. Ending your day. It is very, very important to let each day be sufficient unto itself. When you end your day, always truly end it. Do not take 4 hours of ritual. You can do it within one breath. As you take a deep breath, as you rest your head upon the pillow, look upon the whole day, embrace it with your consciousness, and as you let your breath go out, say silently to yourself, I release and forgive this day. It has been perfect, and it is done. Let it go. Just let it go. Why? If you do not, you will just bring it with you. Do you know that experience? And for 3 weeks you are lamenting, oh my gosh, why did I make that decision 3 weeks ago? If only I'd made a different decision, this would not have happened and that would not have happened. That is probably true, but the point is now 3 weeks later, you are still hitting yourself over the head by bringing the past with you. And you miss the glory of the present. You have all heard that 1,000 times because it is the truth. Consciousness is a very subtle and powerful thing. You cannot help but create. Remember, the goal of this pathway is to learn to deliberately create with perfect mastery. Therefore, look upon the things of the day and say, It is very good, and it is finished. Each night when you rest your head upon the pillow, and you know you are about to go off to sleep, be just like God in your biblical story of creation, in which it is written that on the seventh day God rested. God was finished, in a sense, within the story. Have that same quality at the end of each of your days. If you are carrying some kind of emotional reaction because of something someone said or did, or something you said or did, practice forgiveness before you sleep. If you do not, you will keep experiencing the conflicted energies during your dream states, and communication between you and the other one, who has not yet been forgiven, will keep going on until that forgiveness is complete within you. It is very important. Time should never be taken frivolously. Play with it, yes, but play with it out of consciousness, out of clarity, out of recognizing that there is no such thing as an idle thought. Each thought creates a world of experience for you, and you are worthy of experiencing heaven. We will have much more to say about forgiveness as we begin to plumb the depths of what is discovered, as you practice forgiveness 70 times 7 times. It takes you deeper and deeper into the very mechanics of consciousness itself, the very mechanics of creation. Put forgiveness at the top of your list until you know how perfectly forgiven you are. Be therefore vigilant against denying what is still in need of forgiveness within you. For what you deny, you will project, and each projection is a hurtful act to yourself. Of course, it is also hurtful to the other, but primarily to yourself. There is much that has been said in this lesson that needs to be read again and again, so that the mind begins to truly grasp how important and how powerful forgiveness is. You will reach a place where you absolutely delight in going through your day expressing forgiveness, like a wave emitting itself from the ocean of your consciousness, even if nobody is doing anything. Forgiveness itself becomes a delightful energy to live within. Beloved friends, forgive yourself. Forgive yourself well, and you have forgiven Christ. When Christ is forgiven, Christ will arise and make his home in your heart, your mind, and even in the cells of your body. You will know what it means to walk in this world, yet not be of the world. And you will look in the mirror and say, "Behold, the Savior appears." It will not be egoic arrogance that says it, but the recognition of what is true always. I am my Father's child, and I am sent into this world to bring light to it. Be you therefore at peace. Practice forgiveness well until it becomes like taking a breath. You will discover power that you did not know could exist, and a freedom whose taste is sweet above honey. I forgive you, not because I have judged you, but because I know the blessing that forgiveness brings to me. Forgiveness is something I perfected as a man. Perfect it within yourself as well, and you will know the glory of Christ. Be you therefore at peace, beloved friend. Amen.
That was a pre-recorded. That was awesome. That was Way of Mastery Lesson 3. And Dr. Tim will also be gone tomorrow, and we will replay Way of Mastery, a review of 1 through 19. So those are always good to hear a second time. while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just invite everybody to go to the website, whyagain.org. Click on Start Here or the Bullseye. They both take you to the same place, and you'll find all the worksheets. For one thing, someone asked me the other day where they could find a particular worksheet. And so if you click on the Start Here, there's several drop-downs, and one of them is says that it's for the reality management wake-up sheets, the forgiveness worksheets. But then there is another link, and if you click it, it says other worksheets, commitments, posters, but anything besides the reality management you'll find under there, and they're listed alphabetically. So you can download those, print them off. Now someone had asked also about the Power Person worksheet that we referred to for the codependence intensive, and that is just for intensive participants. It's not on the website. There is an abbreviated version of the Power Person worksheet on the website, but not the detailed 13-page one that we did during the intensive. So we invite you to go there, download those, put the tools to work in your life. You know, we always say you don't have to believe a thing we say, but if you put the tools to work, you'll see a change. And so we invite you to do that. And if you, there's been several people that have said that they've downloaded the app and have started using it, and we're glad. One of the big features on the app now is that no matter what page you're on, if you have a question, there is a link there and you can click it and it will send us your question. I'll get it by email and we will ask it on the show, and then I will email you back and let you know what day and what time that we addressed your question. I'll also usually send you an email back with a abbreviated answer. So anyway, there's lots of tools out there, and we are here 5 days a week to support you, and I'm going to welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We're honored and delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation and hopefully to pass it on to someone outside of the circle at this point as we look deeper and deeper into the circle of life and what we're looking to do with these tools is to bring the principles behind literally everything we experience into alignment with the truth of the physics behind its operation. You know, wherever you go, you know, there's in science, there's this thing looking for the unifying principle. Well, the unifying principle is it's all physics. People talk about metaphysics. There's no such thing as metaphysics. There may be things beyond our senses, but there's nothing beyond physics that we at least can comprehend besides the fact that there is the active presence of love acting upon the world of energy or the world of physics. So when you build the brain, you know, people have all kinds of explanations. People come out of, let's say, a psychological realm, and they have an explanation for a happening. People come out of the theological realm, and they have an explanation for what happening. People come out of the atheist realm, and they have a different explanation for the same phenomenon. But anything that works has to be in alignment with the principles by which the universe works. There's nothing that gets to separate itself out or do something different, though our explanations may seem to make it happen that way. So what we're looking to do is to build the brain cells to understand the principles behind, the basic principles behind the operation of everything. And, you know, the truth of what's going on, you know, if someone has a particular agenda, they may, especially if they're an authority, explain something in a totally, completely incorrect way, and then that's when they start using force and fear and intimidation to force people to believe it, because the truth is they don't have a clue what they're talking about, and their explanation is baloney. That's the only time you need force to get people to believe anything, because if it's true, it's going to be obvious that it's true. So there are many both ancient and modern misunderstandings and misperceptions about what's in operation here, but when we get to the point where we've got the brain cells to recognize the common thread in everything, the principles are the same. And so what we want to do is upgrade out of the flaws of misunderstanding, distorted explanations, and realign our own energy systems, our understanding, our minds around the truth. And when you get to do that, you get to get a more accurate overview of this circle of life. And when that happens, what occurs is we reveal or uncover the empowerment that lies within each individual. You know, within this circle of life, we as human beings, if we don't know how to remove the discordant energetic patterns and acquire the skill sets of understanding and functioning out of what's behind, so to speak, then we don't get to heal. And ultimately, when we start to get into alignment with truth, we literally, you break that word down, reorganize. We literally rebuild the whole organic structure of this thing we call a human life. Realign and bring everything that's out of harmony back into proper alignment. You know, Joe gave us a really powerful example yesterday when he called in. And he spoke about an event that happened when he was, you know, 9 or 10 years of age that was out of alignment with truth, but had run his life for a half a century. You know, it had been a thread throughout his life. And in one of the power person worksheets Gene was talking about earlier, you know, he's in the middle of doing that intensive that self-study, but what he did was touched into one of the threads that was out of harmony with truth. And I think it's just awesome that he was courageous enough to call in and share that with us. And what happens is when you recognize that energy systems bring through more energy and more power by alignment, not by effort. You know, if you've got a poor signal on your television set, and the antenna's out of alignment, you can't go up to the antenna and scream and yell it and try to force it to work better. You're going to have to bring it into alignment so that it brings through the energy flow that it's designed for and the picture on your screen gets better. So each correction that we experience within this body, mind, nervous system enhances our ability and our power to affect change through a deeper awareness and understanding of the principles that's in operation within ourselves, within our family systems. And by so doing, we can shift and therefore impact what's happened with our descendants, and we can shift into a higher state of alignment to be passed on to our future generations. Jonas Salk said something very important. He said, the most important thing you can be is a good ancestor. A good ancestor does the work of healing, passes on a genetic structure that is improved because they inhabited that genetic structure and were inhabited by that genetic structure. The person who lives their lives recklessly in rage with no concern for others, and oftentimes with no concern for themselves, self-damaging, alcohol, drugs, nicotine, pot, whatever, inflicting damage on themselves and therefore passing on a compromised energetic system is not much of an ancestor. So when we understand the principles operative within ourselves and the systems that we are part of, then the game changes. You know, Hippocrates is considered to be the father of modern medicine, and he said, if you are not your own doctor, you are a fool. Now, I know that medicine today says the exact opposite. At least pharmaceutical medicine says if you're your own doctor, you're a fool. But Hippocrates, who understood healing as opposed to understood the practice of medicine, said you have to be your own doctor. My offering is you have to be your own primary healthcare physician. You have to educate yourself to the degree that you are that, so you will understand. And that doesn't mean you have to be able to practice every form of medicine going. It simply means you are your own primary provider, and if you need something, you know who to go and talk to, who to get support from, and you'll know whether what they're feeding you is accurate or not. Because there are many systems of so-called healing that are far, far, far away from truth and healing. You know, if you look at the pharmaceutical industry today, the number one cause of death in America, or pardon me, I think it's number two now, is properly prescribed medication. And I put that word in quotes, properly prescribed medication. Why do you have to be your own healthcare provider? Because you need to, in order to align yourself on every level with every energy, whether it's genetic, whether it's environmental, whether it's magnetic, whatever it happens to be, whether it's thought, you're the one who's going to have to determine what's accurate for you and what needs to be done. Hippocrates goes on to say, the natural healing force within each one of us is the greatest force in getting well. And if someone wishes for good health, one must first ask oneself if he's ready to do away with the reasons for illness. Only then is it possible to help someone. So, what's going on in your life if you've got disease going on? And it could be physical disease. It could be emotional disease. It could be relational. It could be financial. It doesn't matter. The whole energy system is just an energy system. It's all meant to be in alignment. And when we go out of alignment, disease shows up. It's not a natural part of the system. Healing is a natural part of the system when we bring ourselves back into alignment. That's what the system is designed for. So if there's some arena in your life, it might be money, it might be relationship, where there's discomfort and pain and you want improvement, you have to become the physician. You can't come to me to fix you, and you can't go to doctor, and I don't care how many sets of initials he or she has got behind their name. They cannot fix you. They can support you. They can assist you. They can teach you. The original meaning of the word physician is teacher. Doesn't mean one who gives medicine. That's been kind of turned around in our culture today. So what we're here to support is uncovering the natural empowerment, the natural power to heal that resides within you. And if you want a true solution to any challenge in your life, especially if mine tell you it's out there, you're going to have to invest yourself in it. You're going to have to reach the level of a doctorate of understanding of how your energy system works. And a big part of that process is the unlearning process. And the unlearning, which is done through forgiveness, is oftentimes more challenging, time-consuming, than just picking something up totally new and using it. So we're here to support you taking that and putting it to work. And if you want, really want serenity in your life, you know, if you go back to the ancient Aramaic where they said Yeshua talked about my peace I leave to you, that's not the word in Aramaic. It isn't peace. Peace is a word related to war, war and peace, you know, big book, big book. Serenity was the word that he used. My serenity I offer to you, my serenity I leave with you. And sooner or later, you've got to become a student of your own mind. And our culture is, we live in a specialty where we learn to turn off, deny, ignore, project, rather than properly address distress signals from our own nervous systems. And as a result of that, people die. Now, when people are out of alignment and you've got to go to the specialist, there are fortunes to be made there. It's time for us to get out of the drugged environment and wake up to the truth of who we are. One of the things that authorities learned a long time ago, go back to ancient Greece, and they had a thing they called bread and circuses. The basic thesis was, if you can keep people busy with that, you can rob them blind. And they won't notice, pay attention. They won't look at, what are the, the natural things in their lives that they need to be doing. Like, you know, say something as simple as, a lot of people can't be bothered recycling. Yeah, it seems like, well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, in a world where we consume many, many, many times the resources the Earth can ever possibly provide to the population we have, an important part of working within the energy system in which you live, move, and have your being is to recognize that resources are valuable and they need to be used judiciously and they need to be recycled when one is complete with them. But keep people busy. Keep people, you know, and you know, there are many different types of bread and circuses. Bill Moyers, you might remember, was an NPR, you know, very well-known announcer. And what can I say? He went beyond the world. He was a healer. And he says, I hear an almost inaudible but persuasive discontent within the price we pay for our current materialism. And I hear a fluttering of hope that there might be more to life than bread and circuses. Now, today, the bread and circuses look like anything that creates a thrill, anything that creates a shot of energy within the human system. You know, people, you know, the latest football game, the latest soccer, the latest, you know, get people engaged in the entertainment world, the latest movies, bread and circuses. And our objective is to support you in the arena of self-care, of self-healing, and in particular, how to make your unconscious mind conscious. How to bring your biology and your nervous system into harmony with the life forces that are in you. Henry Ford said, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And so our objective is to move through to being able to address the trauma carried around in the nervous systems, right, you know, sadly from the newborn up. To be that space of active love and understand the principles behind the healing process. And it is an understandable process. It isn't something that's off in some remote area that's only for the specialist who's going to go to school for the next 20 years to learn it. And so that's the objective of this work. That's where we're heading. That's what we want to support. And recognize that anything that's based in fear or hostility in particular corrupts the functioning of the human mind, body, nervous system. Warren Buffett, one of the most successful investors in the world, multi-billionaire. And everybody goes to him for investment advice. Do you know what his first piece of investment advice is? The most important investment you can make is in yourself. You need to solidify and bring your own energy system into alignment with the principles of the universe to have a highly functioning, reliable mind and body. And that's our objective. And a major piece of it, you know, Carl Jung said it very succinctly. He said, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives, and we will call it fate. Joe very powerfully shared with us yesterday how something that happened when he was 10 was impacting his relationships today. Unconscious, forgotten, out of mind. objective of each worksheet that we utilize in this work is to bring the unconscious conscious. When you undo those past inflicted energetic patterns that are either physical, mental, or emotional, you can reset and reopen the energy flow in your own body-mind so that it is receptive to higher states of well-being and serenity. And one of the primary things that has been recognized down through the years, in fact, you can go back thousands of years ago and they gave us this piece of advice. And that was that our primary relationships had to be healthy, or there was healing to be done. You had to reach a state where you could heal the dynamics of those primary relationships. The way that it was said, if you look into the scriptures, and you know, that's thousands of years ago, they recognized this. They knew how important it was, and nothing's changed. And this has got nothing to do with theology. Just because it shows up in the scriptures doesn't mean it's theological. It doesn't have to do with pleasing some deity off in space that's going to get angry with you if you don't do it. It's got to do with how your own energy system operates. But you might remember that they said very clearly, and it was not a suggestion. It came in the form of what they called commandments. Sometimes people don't want to look at that stuff, but they're really talking about how the energy system works. Was honor thy father and thy mother. Now, you'll notice there's a particular passage where they ask this man, Yeshua, you know, what's most important in the law? And in the Aramaic language, the word law simply means the way it works, the physics of it. It doesn't have to do with some authority and a rule some authority arbitrarily decided you should follow. And what he says is, you know, the Greeks tell us, he said, you have to love God, love neighbor as yourself. Not even close to what he said. In Aramaic, he said, you must have rachma for the creator and neighbor in order to maintain self. Now, remember, self is love. Created essence is love. Hold a newborn child, tap into the essence of that child, you got a direct experience of the active presence of love. And you want to maintain that. How do you maintain that? Well, this is one of the keys, one of the primary keys. Honor. Notice it in the Aramaic, it said, have rachma for the creator and neighbor. So virtually everybody on the planet, if you, and rachma is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that if you want to maintain self has to be open in order to have love in your human form. So you notice what he said was, keep the gateway open for love to be in your human form when you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor. By so doing, you will maintain your human life. You'll keep the presence of love alive in you. But then when it came to parents, it was a different. It didn't say you have rachma. It said honor. What does honor mean? Well, one, in order to honor anything or anybody, you have to have love present within you. So rachma is a precondition to that. But then honoring is that you bring that active state and that presence of love into action or activity toward the object of the sentence, in this case, parents. And it's especially important if you had abusive or alcoholic or non-present parents. So it's especially important. And there's a principle of physics behind it. It's not some mamby-pamby, oh, wouldn't it be nice? My parents were terrible to me, but I'm going to love them. No, that's not what it's saying. It's saying bring the activity of love that you are into action toward them. Guess what? Primary relationship. We talk over and over about a power person. In most cases, a power person is a parent. Not always, but in most cases. And their childhood experiences that people totally and completely forget about. And so for most people, one or the other or both of their parents were power persons. That means that they weren't functioning as love at a particular time in the child's life, and the child took on the energetic dynamics of that particular event. When honoring parents, and the more challenges you had with them, the more important this is. Because when you can bring active present love into activity, you notice that, you know, for everybody else in the world, you're not required to bring it into activity. You're required to keep it present, but honor is to bring into behavior that active presence of love. And what happens is, the active presence of love flows through the structure where those power person dynamics reside in you and brings you healing. It's not about pleasing some deity who said, oh, you better do this. It's not even about your parents. It's about if you have trauma in you from your life and interaction with your parents, especially in their presence, when that trauma would tend to come forward, the requirement was that you function from love and you bring that love into activity toward them. And as that energy of active present love flows through you, guess who gets to heal? You see, the parent, where there was trauma with the child, the parent is the one who can fully resonate that trauma. So, you know, a lot of I've heard from people, oh, I haven't had any relationship with my father, with my mother for 30 years. I haven't seen them. Don't ever want to see them again. And they say that with tight lips and a locked jaw and the breath held. Those people need to go home. Those people need to go and do some work. And when you bring love present, the truth of you present in your own physiology, in the presence of parents or those who operated as your first authority, operated as parents, then by passing active present love through your own physiology, you get to heal. So you have to deal with those relationships that were your first inputs. You know, if you think about a computer, if the modem is bad, if it's faulty, if the internet connection's poor, then the performance of the computer is not reliable. Well, if your relationship with your mother is faulty, was poor, or father was poor, then your functioning is going to be faulty, guaranteed. And by bringing love present, you know, the primary healing mode is bringing love present into the mind and into the body. And so as you do that, then you get to heal. And that's exactly what we're here to support happening. So if your physiological condition is tense, there's a restriction of blood and energy flow, that will impact your health in a myriad of ways. The mind-body can't tell the difference between a real and imagined experience. If past unresolved traumatic energies are triggered into activity, the biology relives it. Nervousness, sweaty, and Jeannie's just setting up the computer for me. Thank you, sweetie. She's getting ready to go out on an errand, and so I'm going to be handling the rest of the show. Nobody's hand up. Okay. Okay, cool. Thank you, sweetie. So when our biology relives an experience, the breath is held, there's nervousness, sweaty palms, shortening or quickening of the breath, gut pain, hot flashes, headaches, back pain, they're all part of an old trauma being relived physiologically. The cognitive part of the mind, if it's experiencing the trauma that's going on in the nervous system, we call that a flashback. But oftentimes people will go through the reliving of that trauma without having a flashback in terms of cognitive awareness, but only in terms of physiology. You know, have you ever had fear hit you in the gut? Have you ever gone into a fit of rage? Notice what you have to do to express those corrupted and corrupting energies. And we're here to help to move out of those spaces, to provide a full block of tools for moving out of those spaces into the truth of who you are and who each of us is. And Miss Jeannie has just left to take care of an errand, and so here we are. And I'm complete with my monologue, the thoughts that I wanted to put together for today. And so if you're out there in listener land, and what I'm saying arouses some thoughts or questions for you, how do you use the tools in any particular arena? What are the principles behind the tools? If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you have a question, push 1, and that will raise a hand in the control panel. And hopefully I will understand properly how to operate this control panel now that Jeannie is gone, and we'll be able to have a conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, 563-999-3581. And Michael, you started a conversation yesterday. Do you have any thoughts for us? Push 1. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about it. Okay, we've got 770. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Hey, I'm rocking. I'm doing well, sir. Thank you. Got some sweet baby time this morning. And, can you help the kids out with some things? So we're having a sweet time here in Kansas City.
Great.
How about you? What's happening in your world?
We are blessed with wonderful weather. And I just came off the roof and wanted to get something to eat and speak with you all if that was happening, and it looks like it's all gelling together wonderfully.
Perfect. Awesome. Delighted. Thank you.
Yeah,
so what be on your mind today, sir?
Well, I appreciate so much what you said today, as always, and how it relates to my life, and having a few challenges and not being able to find optimal health. And I had this drawing toward you and your work, and now realize it's the nervous system. It's in the trauma from past that's in the nervous system. Would that be right?
Yes.
That's where it's
stored. Yeah, when the nervous system goes into alarm.
Alarm.
Say again?
Yes, alarm and cell danger response related to those things. Would that be correct?
Yes. And when you notice that the system's going into alarm, if there's hostility or fear present, what happens is, basically we've got these ancient survival mechanisms that say, oh my God, there's a tiger over there and I need to get out of Dodge. And so blood flow is shunted to the lungs so that you can take in more oxygen, and to the large muscles so you can either fight or run. It also, while it accents the blood flow and energy flow to those parts of the structure, it takes the energy from the rest of the system right from the brain on down. Higher brain functions are cut off. In fact, part of that fight-flight response or sympathetic dominance is a freeze response. Sometimes people find themselves where, they know that actions require, the business is going down the tubes or the family is in great trauma, I need to do something, and they'll just sit there like a lump, and people will go, what's wrong with you? Why don't you take action? And it's not understood that it's not a matter of somebody saying, I'm not going to take action. The nervous system is so traumatized that it freezes the ability to take action. And that's all part of the required reversal of that energetic pattern to bring healing, because the freeze mode, it isn't, it's the choice that people go, you know, freeze in front of a trauma. It's part of the brain shutting down because of the lack of blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you'll notice that each time something like that occurs, it's always accompanied by the shutting down of the breath or the altering of the breathing pattern. You know, it's interesting, in the ancient teachings, they talk about baptism for the forgiveness of sins. And there's this symbolic washing of water to wash. And the word sin, remember, in Aramaic is an archery term that means off the mark. So to remove the energies that are off the mark. But if you watch Yeshua, you know, you listen to that story, and he goes to this guy named John, and he says, you know, well, it's part of the tradition, so I'm going to go do that. But you'll notice he never used water to baptize anybody. He never did that. And this is physiology. This is healing. This is what it's really about. And they've made that about theology, and it's not. And what they said was, well, he's going to baptize them in the spirit. Guess what the word spirit is there? It's rukah. Rukah de kuchi. It's the breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's the breath. So he never got anybody into the river, and he never got a bucket of water and threw on anybody.
Interesting. I always wondered back in the days why he was not baptized, but now this explains it very, very nicely.
And when you move the breath, literally for the forgiveness of sins, energies that are off the mark, when people lock the breath down, they literally collapse the energetic pattern of trauma and lock it into tissue. You know, it's as though, well, if I can push it down deep enough in my body, I won't have to experience it. But the deeper one pushes it into their body, the more traumatic it becomes, the more the energy system goes into freeze mode.
Mm-hmm.
And what the breath does is simply opens it back up and allows one to fully feel and be in the presence of their trauma. And if you can do that at the same time as real, true, active love is present, and I'm not talking about, you know, the mamby-pamby, you know, love is sexual athletics or love is sacrificing yourself, let somebody else stomp on your head to prove that you love them, that sort. It's nothing to do with that. It's that actual, active, present love is in our physiology at that moment. And when tissue then, when the breath can move and opens the blocks that perhaps have gone on for generations, and they're the things that create the blocks in the nervous system, when the breath opens, all of a sudden those things begin to dissolve. The quote-unquote sin, the energies that are off the mark, literally begin to dissolve from physiology, and serenity is restored physiologically.
Yes, amazing. Thank you for sharing that. You know, as many people I speak with in recent times, where this really comes to mind is with my siblings, the situation for my mom, which we have spoke about. And what I find is with these hurts with people, they just say, well, they don't even go to the point where I'm going to forgive them. Well, I'm just not going to think about it. I put it to rest, and I'm not going to deal with it. And that's exactly what you were explaining. The deeper we push that down, the more trouble that we experience in days to come. Is that correct?
Correct. The deeper the disintegrative energy goes, the deeper the assault to the tissue. The more one is in that fight, flight, freeze mode or fright mode, the deeper the blood flow is cut off to the organs that cause us to regenerate, to live in health and thrive in order to supply energy to the survival-based part of the structure. And, you know, the mind can't tell the difference between a real and imagined experience, an experience that went on when one was three that's resonated 60 years later is no different in terms of the trauma to the body than it was when it was three. It's exactly the same until that energetic pattern is opened and brought forward in the presence of active love, its dissolution doesn't happen. And every time it's resonated, physiology goes through it. You know, one of the things we invite people to do is to really, you know, just be aware of your physiology and tap into that alarm when it goes off. You know, somebody gives you the look and, you know, most people just want to ignore it. Oh, I don't want to think about that. And they will not even allow themselves to recognize the physiological alarm that's going off in their own nervous systems. And they wonder why they die.
Mm. Yes,
and one of the principles we talk about in our codependence work is that the number one pseudo solution of the non-being mind, and here's what people will say after they've said, I don't want to look, I'm not even going to think about it, and you perhaps convince them to start thinking about it, the next thing they'll say is, well, let me see if I can figure that out.
Yep.
And nobody can figure out trauma in the nervous system. Because, you know, if it happened, if it came in genetically from 10 generations ago, and how many people in the bloodline since 10 generations ago has it impacted, and it came into the child's nervous system at conception through the genes, and dad had the same trauma, and as dad relives it, the 3-year-old boy that just got whacked in the head relives it, and on and on and on and on it goes. Nobody can figure that out. But that's what everybody wants to do, is figure it out. And, you know, there's that piece, you know, Paul is talking about the mind, and he explains the mind, and he says, we see as though through a glass darkly.
Yes.
And the word darkly there is actually an enigma, something that's mysterious, puzzling, difficult to understand. And trying to figure it out just doesn't work. But at any given moment, one can put the pen to the paper and start to collapse the perceptual aspect of the trauma, which allows them to drop into the underlying energetic pattern. You know, I go back 30 plus years now, and you know, I'm trying to understand this. I'm trying to, what is going on? What is it that creates? You know, there were 50 people in the intensive, and one person was ready to do a piece of work, and man, stuff popped, and it opened, and they experienced a huge shift and change in their lives. And 49 of the people were kind of like, well, that was interesting, but they didn't get that shift. What happened? The individual was ready. And when the individual is ready, two things, when any of us become ready to heal, two things have to occur simultaneously is what I was taught after pursuing and pursuing and pursuing this question. What's the bottom line of healing? And that is, one, whatever we've dissociated from, whatever's been locked into the nervous system and hidden away has to open. And that's never fun. And at the same time, and that's why in step 4 in the worksheet, you get into the practice of bringing love present to your mind. So if love is conscious, active, and present, and something in that dissociated mind, you know, maybe it's got to do with parents, with the power person, whatever it is, doesn't matter. But if the veil of the temple, and that's not a purple curtain in church, if the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind open, and that trauma held in the nervous system that the system is under alarm over, the energetic pattern of it comes forward. And if love is actually present, either that individual themselves is holding love present, or they're with someone who can hold that space for them, then when those two things meet, dissolution of the trauma is gone. It moves out of the system that fast. Whatever opens. Now, the tendency is to be able to open it piece by piece, because most people have lived their lives shutting it down generations and generations. So the capacity isn't usually there to open all of it all at once. You know, it'd be nice to say, oh, I'm going to do this in an instant. But if I don't have the strength, if I don't have the stability, if I don't have the emotional maturity, if I don't have the practice of using the tools, then it's going to open little piece by little piece by little piece by little piece until I can really start to trust it and understand it, and in particular, soften and open my physiology so that whatever's hidden there can come forward. Whatever I'm in alarm about can come forward in the presence of active love. And that's the practice, cultivating one's relationship with active present love, the truth of it, the real thing, and opening wherever, you know, the mind functions through every cell in the body. So the trauma at any given moment that needs to be accessed literally might be hidden in the big toe or the kneecap or the heart or the lung or the liver. There's only one disease, and that's an energy that doesn't belong in the system. Again, in Aramaic, it was called sin, an energy that's off the mark. And it doesn't matter where in the system the energy is. You know, if it's in the big toe, we call it the big toe disease. There'll be a long Latin name and a drug for it. If it's in the kneecap, it'll be called another long Latin name, and there'll be another drug. If it's in the heart or the lung or the liver or the brain, there'll be a much more expensive drug because it seems that they're more important parts. And so, you know, there'll be all kinds of names, but the truth is there's only one disease, and that's an energy that doesn't belong in the system. Can I move into the practice of literally letting everything in my structure soften? And the tightness might be in my hands. It might be in my eyes. It might be in my jaw. It might be in my throat. It might be in my buttocks. It might be in my feet. Wherever it is, can I soften that? Allow the alarm to pass. Go of needing to figure it out and just allow the raw energy to come forward in the presence of active love.
So this alarm, the system that we have in the nervous system, is that part of the limbic system of the brain?
Well, it ties in, but it's really, it's the autonomic nervous system. You know, there are two aspects of the autonomic nervous system. One is, you know, when somebody goes into that alarm stage, and the nervous system goes into, oh my God, they go into what's called sympathetic dominance.
Okay.
And sympathetic dominance is emergency, alarm, set all systems for survival, we're under threat. Now, whether the threat is real or imagined doesn't matter. If the unresolved trauma was perceived as life-threatening, every time it is resonated into activity, it will be perceived once again as life-threatening. You know, that's why, you know, the 6'6", 280-pound, muscle-bound weightlifter, wrestler, champion is holding a cherished 3-month-old baby, and something the baby does triggers alarm in that 280-pound muscle-bound man, and now he's in survival. And we hear of this too often. He shakes his own cherished baby to death. His mind can't tell the difference between a real and an imagined experience. If the alarm goes off, it goes off. And sadly, wherever the trigger is, you know, it can be in an intimate relationship. It could be with an infant. It could be with a child. It could be with a neighbor. Whatever triggers that off, the structure goes into that survival mode. And if somebody doesn't have the tools to address the alarm, go back and resolve the original event, then it tends to play out as another trauma, and especially between a parent and a child, and it inflicts the trauma of the father. You know, listen to that statement in the scriptures, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. The father inflicts that energy upon the child, and the child, you know, not having been given the skills, carries it on through their lives and passes it on to their child, who passes it on, who passes it on. That's why that primary relationship honor thy father and thy mother is so important, because that's what heals that part of the nervous system and allows one to move from sympathetic dominance to parasympathetic dominance, well, actually to parasympathetic balance. It's kind of a continuum. And in parasympathetic balance, what happens is all of the organs that were shut down by the alarm, you know, in order to shunt blood and energy to the muscles and the lungs for survival, you know, you didn't need to urinate, you didn't need to defecate, you didn't need to reproduce, you didn't need to produce red blood cells, you didn't need immunity in that moment. You know, if there's a tiger chasing you, your immunity doesn't mean anything. So all of those things are shut down, the blood, the energy shunted away from those functions into sympathetic dominance, into survival. And if somebody, you know, every day they go into the office and the boss triggers their trauma again, you know, they're living the trauma of a child of three day after day after day, and the mind can't tell the difference between a real and imagined trauma and what these tools we've designed to allow is to open that and to allow one to move into parasympathetic function, open the flow through the whole system, and clean out the trauma and the alarm that sets it in motion. But as Paul said, we're looking at it through an enigma. We're looking at it through something that's mysterious, and who can figure it out? Nobody can figure it out, but that's what everybody wants to do. But we can forgive it. The beauty is, whatever we can't figure out, we can always apply forgiveness. And that's what opens the structure and restores.
Not figuring it out.
Not figuring it out. Restore parasympathetic activity.
Yeah. I remember back a few months ago when I was first getting into the work, I remember someone saying, you, Dr. Tim, somebody saying, I can't figure it out. That does not do it. And I'm sitting there to myself, what are they talking about? You can't figure it out. But now I'm beginning to understand way more on this side. So,
not even remotely possible.
Yeah.
And when you start looking at, you look at a conflict between two people, and I would offer that probably 99.9% of conflicts that happen, let's say, for within a marriage, there's no conflict between this husband and wife. There's a conflict between the three-year-old trauma in the husband triggered by the five-year-old trauma in the wife. And now they're trying to take those two nervous systems that are in alarm and each one trying to control the other so that that trauma is never triggered into activity again. And that just creates more conflict and more craziness. You know, if you want to see an example of the craziness of that and think of it in terms of sympathetic, parasympathetic, watch the movie War of the Roses. It's insane. However, and the purpose of the commitment from our Healing Through Relationships workshop, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth, to be true to you and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, my words, my actions, whether I'm in your presence. You get two people who set that as their personal code, and that is the guide for their mind, keeping the pathway open to the connection to love, and those traumas can come forward, and they can be melted, and they can be dissolved, and they can be removed from the structure, and that's what forgiveness is, the melting, the dissolution of those things, rather than the three-year-old's trauma filters through a mind and builds a picture of a wife who's, you're the enemy. Well, yes, last night you were the best thing that's ever happened to me. You were better than sliced bread. But today, now that my mind's in sympathetic dominance, you are my deadly enemy. Mm. And I'll do anything to change you.
Yes.
And, you know, we now have a world with, you know, a 50% plus divorce rate.
Yes. And Michael, how does this relate to where you were explaining yesterday about the ego? Can the can we say the three-year-old trauma mind of an adult and the five-year-old trauma mind of the adult, is that the egoic mind?
That's all ego. E-G-O.
That's all ego.
Remember those initials, edging God out. Edging love out
edging
of the structure.
Oh,
I can
my.
Say, you know, last night we were lovers and we had such a wonderful, and it's so great, and you're such a, you know, oh, it's so wonderful to have you in my life. And then today, when my trauma is triggered, when my alarm system goes off and I don't pay attention and realize there's healing to be done in my own physiology, I'll generate a perceptual construct about you, and I'll try and figure out why you're doing this to me and what and how it and again, it can't be done. But in any given moment, we can stop. And if love has been edged out of us, E-G-O, edging love, edging God out, we can be restored to love. And that's the idea of that commitment. You know, I mean, that commitment is actually, you know, it's been edited some in the last 2 years. And I've been working on that commitment for 35 years. And every idea that's in it, it's autobiographical. If you read the commitment carefully, you'll see everything that I've been through personally. Because each time I came across, man, here I am. I'm lost in my sympathetic dominance again. What do I need to do to shift my mind into another space? Every word in that commitment is about moving into parasympathetic, moving into a mode of safety where all faculties are available, and I'm in healing mode rather than in alarm mode. And pain is nothing but a warning signal that there's an alarm mode going on. There's something, there's an energy here that needs to be dealt with.
Yes. Powerful thinking here. That's amazing.
Well, you know, the thing that to me is most amazing about it is nobody has improved on what this man Yeshua delivered 2,000 years ago. This is what he delivered.
Yes, I see. And even more amazing, they actually are pushing that down and running from it.
What
we see and taught. Yeah.
Well, the key is you got to do your work. If people aren't doing their work, then develops all kinds of belief systems, all kinds of BS, and make up all kinds of stories about how some super outside force is going to come in and fix everything for me because I don't know how to fix it. And I really, you know, and the super outside force is there and said, okay, here's how you do it, but you have to do it. And when he instructed people, you know, there's that passage we've talked about before where they say, well, what do we need to do? And he says, here it is. And they literally half of his disciples got up and walked away. And the words the scriptures report them saying was too hard a saying. It's too hard to do that. Too hard to take control of my own nervous system and deal with generations and generations and generations of pain and trauma. Too hard a saying. Just give me an easy theology where, bingo, it's fixed. And there's no such thing. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah. Too much work. We've been conditioned as people in this world today to take the easy way, and like you just mentioned, someone else is going to do it, come and do it for us.
Exactly.
And that's very, very difficult.
It's just not in alignment with the truth of what any teacher who has ever known the truth has taught. It's just not in alignment.
Not a good place to be.
But it makes for a good story.
Wow. Well, I certainly appreciate.
Well, delighted that it's
y'all.
Delighted it's impacting you, and we're down to the last few seconds, and so appreciate the conversation, and certainly, you know, the whole objective is to be here to pass it on and make it available to literally to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And appreciate the part, the role that everybody plays in supporting that and making that happen.
Yes, indeed. Thank you all very much, and enjoy the rest of your day, sir.
All right. Be blessed. Lots of love. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. The world needs it. You were designed to give it. Blessings. Bye-bye.